better.
I like it.
Well, there are two things to be done. First of all, we put him in the hospital and withdraw all television.
I see.
And then we give him this. Radio!
Welcome to the show. I'm Daniel Keelman.
And I'm Kyle Lamont.
And this is episode number 161 of Test Patterns, a podcast that loves pens. Why do we love pens? Because this
so versatile.
Is the penultimate episode of Test Patterns. Drop the mic. I'm done. That's it. That's the final episode. I'm done.
You can only go downhill from there.
I cannot stop a mad rhyme play on words like that. No, can't stop it. So this is the penultimate episode. This is our last proper show, but we're going to still give you all what you come here every week for, what you love, what you savor, what you taste so well about the Test Patterns. Right. We're still going to give it to you.
Yeah.
Whole hog.
No skimping. Three segments.
No skimping. No.
It'll be everything.
What was the thing we always used to make a reference to? You'd say like whole hog or like...
Yeah, I think it was
meat
whole
on the
hog
bone or something like that. Yeah, what's the thing?
There's plenty of bone. There's plenty of meat on that bone. Like, make a stew out of it, and I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's Arrested Development, and like we just ran with it a couple times. But
yeah,
we're gonna
give you a lot of
meat on this bone for the podcast for sure. Kyle, how are you staying cool?
With lots of fans and going to a place that I won't go into because I've mentioned it way too many times on this podcast.
The place that's co-sponsoring your life right now.
Yes. that's about it. Been playing a lot of Witcher 3 still. I think that's also a thing that I've talked about endlessly.
Yes.
Have I talked about Minish Cap on this podcast?
No. Why don't you tell them what Minish Cap is?
Yeah, it's the Legend of Zelda game. Like, I think it came out in like 2003 or somewhere around there, early 2000s for Game Boy Advance. I think that's correct.
Yes, it is.
I'm playing it on the Wii U, which is fun because someone's using the TV. I can use the gamepad, and it's fun. I don't know. I think the last time I did a lot of the side quests in a Zelda game was maybe like Ocarina of Time. I still haven't finished Wind Waker. I know borrowed from you, like, but
the GameCube like a long time ago.
Yeah. Like even games like like Twilight Princess. Like I certainly didn't do all the side quests on all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm liking a lot of side quests with like they have like these kinstone pieces that you're constantly picking up just as you wander around. And it's good about how they kind of pop up on the map, and you're like, oh, I remember that spot on the map, and oh, now I have the flippers. I can easily get to that. So I've just been kind of checking those off. And it seems like it's a pretty short game, because I don't think there's, like, another, like, dark map.
There isn't.
There isn't? Okay, good.
No, you'll be fine.
But it's pretty good. I think the dungeons are not... The dungeons are getting a little better now, but the dungeons are almost like, oh, I've played so many Zelda games at this point, like, they're kind of, like, easy at a certain point. There are a few, like, tricky puzzles with, like, kind of, you can duplicate yourself, like, 2, 3, 4 times. Those get a little harder. I just went to, like, the Ice Palace, and that was a little hard, because you're moving, I think you're moving, like, two links around. On the ice, and that's a little rough getting to the other side of the room to like flip a bunch of switches on the ground, but yeah, pretty fun.
I played Minish Cap when it first came out, and I beat it then, and I do remember it being one of the more breezier Zelda games. It's very fun and well designed, but I agree that it, and I like the gimmick of it where you can shrink and everything, like that's fun, but I do agree that I remember that game, the boss battles, the dungeons, they were just forgettable and really, really easy, and
it has all the same stuff. Like it's real rinse repeat. Like hit things back, stay away, and not get sucked up.
Now, if you want one,
you use all the weapons that you get in the dungeon, like a lot.
Yeah, they actually really did reinvent that with the recent handheld one, the Legend of Zelda: Link Between Worlds, the one that came out on 3DS. That game was actually like it not only like changed up the formula because you could go to the dungeons in any order you wanted, but that actually made the game a lot harder. That game was difficult. It was actually like pretty hard in spots. I'm not like, you know, we're not talking
Was that the one where they had like weird puzzles where you're like going up on the walls, right? You become like two dimensional.
You did, but that really wasn't one of the puzzles. I mean, those added an element to it, but now the puzzles and the dungeons were actually like pretty complicated. Yeah, like because the reason why it was hard is because you didn't know which item was used for that dungeon. So I mean, there was one item that got used more than others, but you kind of could use anything, so it was a little bit tricky. So
yeah, I'll have to play that. Probably eventually with like the NX or something, I'll play that or borrow the handheld from you.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's a very, very fun one. I actually would like to, I'd love to go back and play it, but that's never going to happen. I have so many other things to play. So, but it's fun.
Cool.
Anyway, well, very fun. Glad you're staying cool that way. And sounds like you're living the life as always.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
My weekend was, pretty busy, just staying busy on a lot of, like, little projects for life, I would say. Just keeping busy on things. What did I do? I thought I did something. I didn't do anything that exciting, because, like, Friday night, I didn't sleep a lot on Thursday night, and I got home on Friday night, and I just, like, crashed. Like, it was just, like, one of those kind of nights on Friday, I remember.
When you were thinking there for a second, I was like, what immediately popped in my head was like, oh man, gotta clip my toenails. It's like, I thought you were gonna go into a toenail clipping epic story. I mean, like cut your toes.
Sorry to disappoint that it wasn't anything to do with toenails.
Disappointing the viewers and the listeners and
the viewers especially. The viewers most of all. No, I don't know. Well, actually, no, I take that back. I've been training a lot because I'm doing a half marathon next weekend, so I've been training for that a little bit. So I ran a bunch of miles yesterday, and so it's been a lot of that. But otherwise, just keeping busy and everything.
So when you're training, do you have go to mixes or do you constantly bring in new songs to listen to?
For my training, I usually listen to podcasts.
That's good. They make
for running, you do need that energy every now and then, and I do have a running playlist that I have as an emergency thing on my iPod if I need it, or I have some music that's like really energetic and everything. Yeah.
But I could see, but, like, you could just zone out, and if you really want to listen to an album, it's probably not the best way to go about it.
No. It is. Like, it's actually really, you'd be surprised. It can be really good at times. Sometimes you just like want something. The music definitely, I think they've actually shown studies that say listening to especially more energetic music, like stuff that's faster with more beats per minute, that actually does make you work, like whether you're working out or running, it does make you do better. So there are studies that show that, but for me, I kind of save that for when I really need it. I don't want to use that unless I have to, so I usually just have a podcast on, because most of the time my runs are just long. Like, they're not like that, they're not that hard, and they're not that easy, they're just really long. And so I like to just listen to a show, but I have to listen to specific ones. It can't just be anything. I have to listen to something that's gonna like keep me awake and keep me engaged and entertain me. And I have some go-to podcasts that's true.
If it was dry, they probably like start losing energy lose interest, and you're like, oh, I want to go back home.
Yeah, basically anything NPR podcast I can't listen to when running. It's just too low-key and
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, not that exciting. So it's good. Usually my video game podcasts are the ones that are the best to listen to when I'm running. Those are just very energetic and they keep my attention really well. And I have like four or five that I listen to. So yeah, it's really good.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Exciting stuff. And I don't know what else. Just trying to stay caught up on shows, stay ahead of everything. I was like, last week was busy. So
it's the perfect time for that.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Not a lot of new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go into it, but I've been liking the strain this season. I mean, we only have one more episode, but if anybody that knows me also watches The Strain, touch me, because I don't know anyone that watches that show.
You could start a Strain podcast. That's what you can do.
Exactly. Kyle. People just coming out of the woodwork.
Mm-hmm. Have as many Strain conversations as you like.
Strain cosplay, Strain tea parties.
Yeah, we reviewed The Strain. It's the show on FX by Guillermo del Toro. He produced it, and it's like the horror TV show, or like there's mutants and stuff, or
vampires. Something. Yeah, it's kind of like a new version of vampires.
Right. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying that, Kyle. That's what it really matters. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any new shows right now. Like, actually, I will say this, is I think it's... I think it's coming back. They took 2 weeks off, but I think tonight The Daily Show comes back, and it's heading into its final run with Jon Stewart. And it's going to be interesting to see how that goes.
I always pop in, like, I probably talked about it on the podcast, but yeah, I randomly pop in and maybe, like, check out, like, a week's worth of Daily Show every once in a while. I don't keep up, but this is, like, a perfect time since he's going towards the end.
They're gonna pull all the stops with these final ones. I mean, they're gonna go pretty crazy, I think. They've already said that Barack Obama's gonna come back, and I think Bill Clinton, too, and some other people. Yeah, so it's exciting stuff. Yeah. I've been watching The Daily Show. I mean, like, I watched it when I was it's been on for a while. I watched it pretty regularly when I first went to college, and then I took a break for a while, and then when I graduated, I got back into it. So probably for the last 5 years, I've been probably watching it every episode. Like, I really, really stay on top of it. Because it's a really well-written show. It's great. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the new host. I don't know much about him. It's going to be hard to replace Jon Stewart, so we'll definitely see how that goes. But I'm also excited because...
I haven't checked out that host before. I saw him on he was on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yeah, he was.
I had no idea who he was before that.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people in America do, and a lot of people have already jumped to judgment on him. I mean, the reality of it is I know so little, and I don't know what they're going to do with the show with him as the host. So I'm open to finding out. Like, I definitely want to see.
Yeah, a lot of different changes.
I'm mainly excited for Colbert coming back in the late show. Like, the little things he's been doing leading up to that, I'm really enjoying. So I'm feeling pretty good about how that's going to go. So definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, I like that public access thing that was
With Eminem. Yeah,
that was funny.
That's pretty great. And it actually was interesting too, because like people are saying, okay, I'm going to make a bold prediction here. So this will be forever cemented in the penultimate episode of Test Patterns. But people have been saying with Colbert, they're like, well, you know, he's going to be hosting this show, and this is the first time he's going to be himself. Like, he's been playing the character, like this, you know, right-wing pundit, right? Stephen Colbert. And I always had a feeling, I was like, I don't think he's going to be like Letterman or Conan and all of a sudden be like super just laid back. I think he's going to be, like, I don't think he's going to have the right-wing angle anymore, but I think he's going to be exactly how he's been, like kind of like a smartass and a little bit cocky. Yeah. Like, it's going to, I think it's still going to be a character of sorts. And that Eminem thing just proved my point. Like, I was like, yep, I think this is what it's going to be like.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I kind of liken it to, I mean, it's kind of different. I guess they're from the same background, but like Conan, like, he kind of puts on a different style when he's performing versus, like, you know, he's a writer, that's his background, so it's kind of similar, where like that's not him just normally. I'm sure he's way more laid back than that.
Like, well, no, it's that's Conan's, like, he's being a goofball when he interviews the people, and like, even, and then you can go to like Craig Ferguson, like he's like super laid back and just does a freeform conversation. Like, everyone has a version of what they do, and then you have like the template of what like is normally what it is. And I think Stephen Colbert is going to stay pretty close to how he was before, and I think that Eminem video proved my prediction about that, which is like, yeah, I think this is how it's going to be. Like, you're not going to really be able to tell if it's a joke. Sometimes it's going to be similar to what it was, and I like that. I think he had a great style, so I want it to be more of that.
Well, plus
so
that
I'm
makes
excited.
For like, really good everything's about like virality with a lot of late night shows now. Like, you can't just do the normal things. Like, it's like,
well, and
getting
also
people that are guests like, kind of out of their comfort zone, or getting the host out of his comfort zone.
Exactly. And I actually always liked Stephen Colbert's interview style. Like, I thought on the Colbert Report, I looked forward to the interviews, like, because he asked the super weird questions, and he made things like just really, really funny. So it was great. So I'm excited. I might actually stick around for the interviews for a show. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we should get started on our own show here, though, Kyle. Would you like to do the honors? You want to say what we're talking about this week?
Sure. We are going to talk about another Netflix goodie, Tig Notaro's new documentary movie, just called Tig, about her last few years, what she's dealt with. And then we're going to talk about Rick and Morty, kind of leading up to the season 2 of the Adult Swim irreverent cartoon. And then finally, there was a surprise Wilco album. I think it's their 9th. It's called Star Wars.
Yes.
And it's got a cute little kitten on the cover there. So that's rounding out the three segments for the week. So yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Well, I'm excited to hear what we have to say about it. I don't know what we're going to say at all. So it's going to be interesting for everybody. Everybody's surprised. Christmas in July. All right, then let's get started here, Kyle. First up, we're discussing the new Netflix documentary movie, Tig.
I've had it maybe three times where the person going on in front of you is so good you stop being the next comic and you become an audience member.
Please welcome my friend, Tig.
Please welcome the very funny Tig Notaro.
How's it going? Good.
My career has always been just going steadily up. In early 2012, I was busier than I'd ever been. And then I collapsed. The doctor said my insides were inflamed beyond recognition.
A week later, my mother died.
And then I found a lump. After everything that had happened, I have cancer. As soon as I was diagnosed, everything came over me as funny. I love stand-up so much. I wanted to do it one more time.
Good evening. Hello. I have cancer. How are you?
In 2012, comedian Tig Notaro made a very popular comedy routine that she did, which she wasn't really thinking. I mean, she definitely put a lot of thought into at the time, but she really didn't know what to do, where she very famously went up live and did a short routine about her just finding out, or at least coming out with into the public, about her battle with cancer. She had been diagnosed with cancer, and she had a very, very unique stand-up routine about it, where it mixed there's a lot of emotions. It was very, for those that haven't listened to it, it was on, it ended up being on like NPR, and very famously Louis C.K. tweeted about it, saying like, this was one of the, you know, best like special stand-up moments I've ever seen in my life, yeah, in my career of doing this. And a lot of other people validated it too. And it was a very, very touching routine where it like mixed humor with reality and sadness and tragedy, but like still being awkward and making fun of the frustrations of it too. It's a very, very brilliant short set for anybody that's listened to it. I have listened to the whole thing. And I'm not sure if you have, Kyle. It got released called Live.
I hadn't before, and I started watching the documentary, but after I finished it, I went back and and actually listened to it for the first time. And yeah, I really enjoyed
it.
But I think the documentary still held up without me listening to the.
It does. And so that was the moment that happened for comedian Tig Notaro, and she was 41, diagnosed with cancer, and the documentary doesn't necessarily chronicle her bout with being diagnosed, because it takes place after the fact. It more is about her deal with getting diagnosed with cancer, but it's also about her becoming more of kind of finding her voice again in this post world, where it changed her routine and changed her view on everything and changed her life forever. I mean, of course it would, but the documentary really just chronicles this period of time with her while she was like being diagnosed with cancer, and dealing with that, but also trying to find her footing as a comedian again, and also trying to become pregnant with her new fiance. And so there's a lot of different. It's not just this. So first up, I just want to say that what I liked about this documentary is that it does a good mixture of stand-up comedy with like what was going on in her life. Like, it's not just a straight up stand-up special, which Netflix does a lot of. Like, this is an actual documentary, and it interweaves the comedy into it pretty well, because it's a pretty unique story, and she's definitely has a story to tell.
Well, the thing you were talking about with like after she had the diagnosis, and then definitely after the stand-up album like blew up and sold like tons through Louis C.K.'s site. Yeah, it was very interesting how she was like, oh, I can't just, like, totally just make this a career where I'm just, like, making fun of my cancer. But I like the way that her next few, like, you know, the second half of the documentary is kind of, like, it's both her leading up to the anniversary show of the Largo, but then also, like, trying to get pregnant, even though it could mean her doom as far as her health.
Yeah.
And that was really fascinating. But I also like that kind of like B story of the documentary, where she's kind of like, you know, like a comedian, like you get or a musician, you have a big release and you're like, well, I want to build off of that. And it's weird because it's like, it's also building off of your own tragedy, like kind of mining laughs from it. But I kind of liked it. You can kind of follow the trajectory, like for one specific joke, she was talking about her breast cancer, how she was always like making fun of her breasts, and like, oh, she has a joke about like, oh, them little titties. And then you can kind of see the trajectory of that joke. My wife pointed it out where she started it and it didn't have quite of the punch where like the punchline was, oh, they're, my breasts are trying to get rid of me. But then she, by the end, she, her, the final punchline was like, oh, let's kill her. And that was the, kind of like the punchline that she went with when she went live.
Right.
So those little moments were cool. And it wasn't like they went ahead and like had a flashing red arrow that pointed at it. It was pretty subtle, but, overall it was very emotional, especially when the early parts of it. And then some crushing realizations later on, wow.
Yeah, for being a movie about a comedian, there's a lot of sadness in this. I mean, it's definitely, you get a lot of insight into her life. You get this whole story about her mother because her mother passed away before she got diagnosed with cancer.
Her relationship with her mom. Kind of like,
yeah, and so your
comedy was from her.
You're definitely getting a lot of her, and you're getting a lot of her story, and it's all really. It couldn't have happened to a better person because Tig Notaro, like you and I actually saw Tig Notaro at Sasquatch like before this all happened, I remember.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting. I saw
her once before Jens Lechman too. And that was an odd show because like as the documentary pointed out, like she's very slow with her delivery. And when you hear her for the first time, it's kind of like, this is awkward. But she's really like honed that awkwardness and kind of made it her own, especially with what's happened to her personally. But yeah, go ahead with the Sasquatch story.
Well, there isn't much to say beyond that. Just like we saw her before, like everything happened here. So it was interesting for me because I remember when that did happen too, with that whole, and like Louis C.K. said about that tweet and the whole, like it really, really broke. And this documentary is good because it does a good job of chronicling like something going viral nowadays and seeing Tig Notaro's reaction to it and how she handles it is really interesting because it is a really, really weird situation to be in where something really tragic has happened that she wasn't trying to benefit off of in this way and she can't really do anything with it. Like you pointed out, Kyle, like she can't go out and do like, you know, I have cancer routine and she has to like find a new, and what's interesting in the documentary that I liked about it is you're seeing some very private stuff, her like going to the doctors and like struggling with everything and recovery. You see her in the hospital room, like, and her like Sarah Silverman visiting her and Todd Barry are trying to make her feel better and stuff. And so you see these real moments, but that you also see her then dealing with the aftermath of that, of being like, okay, like now what do I do? Like, this is a really weird position to be in and she can't like do the same routine. Like that moment in time when she did that routine is like, it's forever cemented as that. Like, she can't really reenact that. She has to find
new
things.
It has that shock value of the moment. And then, I mean, just the way it released, like, normally Largo shows. Like, I always wanted to go to a Largo show, whether it was comedy or music when I was living in L.A., but I never ended up going. But their whole thing was, like, they don't record, like, video or audio. So that was already, like, a special thing on top of her, what she actually delivered that night.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like...
Yeah,
I thought it was really well done. I mean, it's hard to criticize it because it's such a personal documentary, but I thought some of the stuff towards the end where you're kind of like, she split, the documentary is kind of splitting time between her leading up to the big moment, the big show, the anniversary show, and then her kind of, you know, working out things with like is she not going to be with this woman who isn't quite sure if she's, you know, a lesbian or not. She said she only likes guys. That was interesting at first, but it felt a little like drawn out towards the end of it. I like the conclusion of all those things, but just it felt a little meandering just in certain segments there's just a lot to cover, and you already have those bombshells at the beginning where she's talking about C. diff.
Yeah, it's hard because I think the documentary does a pretty good job of when it gets to that story of her meeting her girlfriend and how they like, you know, got to know each other and stuff and being cute. Like, I like the way that's done. Like, there's this really nice animation of text messages going on between them that I thought was a, you know, new way of doing that. And it's a nice little story on its own. But in the place of the whole documentary, I agree. It's very it's kind of necessary. Like, you need something to break up the tension, but you also like it still feels like kind of shoehorned in, and then they have to like go back to the main story.
Yeah. Well, and there were good moments when they interlaced her story. Like, this whole thing's about like change, like whether it's her kind of, you know, forced to change her routine based off of like her life. Like, she didn't have to necessarily do that, and then you know,
right.
being brave enough to like try to have a baby and have hormone therapy,
right?
Even though it could kill her. But I also like those little moments where like they had that like Conan show where she brought up she kind
that
of
part's
yeah
good,
she
yeah.
interlaced the whole thing where she. She never thought of herself as somebody that just constantly texts everyone. Like, she really hated that. And then she got into a relationship where she was just infatuated with this other person. And a lot of us have been in that spot where you're just constantly texting about, like, mundane things. And she weaved it into her comedy routine. And she didn't say it was planned at all, but it was just, like, really perfect the way it all helped hold it out when she was live on Conan.
That's a funny pay. I mean, I'm not saying like, the love story, it's not that it's like you do get those moments and it does have that emotional pull because it does tie back into her getting pregnant. So it's not
a lot of content because there's all this stuff about her podcast that they throw in there and how like she went through that to get like the initial donor and then her friend turned into a significant other, and then it was kind of like, are they, aren't they? I still liked it as long as it was like focused on the emotion and then how that tied into what she did on stage or, you know, what she did personally. It still was good overall.
Yeah, it's still good. I think that this is what I liked about this is like it's a very heartfelt story that you can't help but have like you said, you can't really criticize the film too much. I mean, it's just, you know, it's sad but moving at the same time and ultimately like has a nice ending to it and everything. Like Tig Notaro is still touring and she's, you know, recovered and she's having she's really found a good career as a comedian because it has made her work in a different way now. And I actually like that part a lot too, is like seeing her struggle with trying to find the humor in the situation. And she talks about how she goes to the shows and they talk her up and they say like, and now like, you know her, she's famous, we're so lucky to have her here. And she's like, no, like don't do like downplay,
you know, this
don't.
One and this is gonna be good. She's like, oh
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
One, she feels terrible because there's still like tragedies that are happening, like they're not it's not quite as like in succession as like what happened, you know, in 2012, but you know, she's still reeling from all this, so she's trying to pick up her career and, you know, and push it along at the level that she's at now, which is it's crazy but very fascinating to watch.
It's a good watch. I mean, it's, you know, if you have a Netflix account or know somebody that does, then it's waiting there for you to watch, and it's worth your time. It's a really interesting look into a very, very unique situation in stand-up comedy. Tig Notaro is a good comedian, so it's worth your time to check it out and just see what that, if you heard about that story when it first happened, like this is a good peek behind the rest of the story.
Yeah, exactly.
It's well made, very short and sweet, and it's a good watch for sure.
Couldn't agree more.
So, okay. And also, it goes without saying, I should have said this at the top, but the film was directed by Christina Goolsbee and Ashley York. So, just want to throw that out there, give the directors their credit. Cool. All right, Kyle, any other words on Tig?
No, I think that you wrapped it up quite succinctly there.
Excellent. All right, so that is on Netflix, the aforementioned documentary Tig that came out this week. Next up, we're going to be discussing about talking about... it's coming back soon, so in anticipation of it, we're going to be discussing the first season of the cult, much-beloved Cartoon Network animation show, Rick and Morty.
Coming this July to Adult Swim.
Stay back! This watch turns people into snakes!
Science makes sense.
What the hell is happening?
This is healthy, trust me.
Family doesn't.
Here, go away.
You sold a gun to a murderer so you could play video games?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you spend all day shuffling words around, you can make anything sound bad, Morty.
Rick and Morty, all new season, premiering Sunday, July 26th.
Seems like something terrible happened here.
Yep, should change.
Only on Adult Swim.
We thought it would be perfect to talk about the Adult Swim cartoon Rick and Morty on the penultimate episode, since there's been a long history at Test Patterns of fans, friends of Test Patterns, recommending really, really cool TV shows, albums, and who knows what, movies, everything under the sun. And Rick and Morty was another recommendation. I went up recently during July 4th weekend and visited friends from from college, Lenny and Bethany. Shout out to them for putting me in the direction of Rick and Morty. I'd heard of Rick and Morty just because it got a lot of really good reviews. I saw the stuff on Metacritic, but it was Adult Swim, and I've kind of not really got into a lot of Adult Swim just because, I don't know. I guess I was just I was prejudiced. I just thought a lot of it was kind of sophomoric and just not really focused in a comedic way.
Yeah, and a lot of them come off as being Aqua Teen like, which sure. I'm not a big fan of that show, and they all kind of can seem like that at times.
Yeah, I've seen some of that. But yeah, Rick and Morty is really cool because I think it has a very simple concept if you just look at it from that pilot episode, but it blows up in beyond that with whether it lampoons certain films or kind of goes into weird sci-fi directions. But basically the people that created it are Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon. Dan Harmon's guy from Community. And these guys are just you can tell they're just plugged into pop culture, wherever it lies. It could be 50 years ago or it could be very present kind of pop culture-y kind of stuff. And the two main characters are Rick and Morty. There's the old grandpa character. It's voiced by the same person. And then Morty, who's kind of his good-natured, but very... He's a teenager, so he's very, he's hung up on, girls, and he doesn't quite know what he's going to do. He's always constantly, getting into awkward situations, and that's basically the comedy there. And then Chris Parnell, he's the father, Jerry Smith, there's Beth Smith, and then Summer Smith. So you get that family that you see in Family Guy or you see in The Simpsons, but they're all thrown into crazy sci-fi or fantasy situations because the grandfather character is just this mad scientist who's constantly drinking and belching. I would say don't let the belching get to you. I've seen a few people that are kind of turned off of that by that at first, just because oh, this is Adult Swim. But it kind of makes sense overall, especially with the timing. Certain situations will be something that's awkward, and then it just comes in, and it just kind of adds another layer to the comedy there. But yeah, that's the general intro there for Rick and Morty. But let's dive into what we really like about it. Some of the nitty gritty details from the first season, since the second season is coming up.
Yeah, I do want to say again, much thanks to Lenny and Bethany for recommending this. They did it with Adventure Time for me, and that exposed me to that whole world, and I love it. And this is a whole new one. I really love this show a lot.
Yeah, did you?
Thank you.
How quickly did you watch it? I watched half of the season in a few days.
I watched the whole season in less than a week for sure, because it's all 30-minute episodes. I mean, it's really short. It's only 11 episodes, and the only reason I took so long is because I didn't want it to end so quickly. I'm going to watch it again. I really, really loved it.
Yeah, they're really rewatchable. Especially since I really liked binge watching it, because a lot of them, there's a few episodes towards the end that kind of tie back to older episodes. The writing is really, really strong, from a structural standpoint, but definitely from a comedic standpoint.
Exactly. And also I wanted to say that the other voices on the whole voice cast on this show is really, really strong. And the other ones are Spencer Graham. Sarah Chalk plays the mom, and she was Elliot on Scrubs. And then you have Spencer Grammer, who is Kelsey Grammer's daughter. She does the voice of the sister. And then you have a rotating cast of other people. John Oliver shows up really memorably in one episode, among other people. And it's such a fantastical show. What I like about this show a lot is that it uses the medium of animation to perfect degree, because everything the show goes everywhere. I mean, it goes in space, it goes through time, it does whatever the hell it wants. It reminds me of Futurama in that vein, where Futurama is one of the rare shows that also can basically do anything it wants. There's nothing stopping it, because it's set in the future in a distant world where they can do whatever. And this show basically has a very similar loose presence. Some episodes they shrink them down and go inside the body and journey there, and then other times they go to the end of space and go to other planets and different dimensions, and it's it's all really fun to watch from an animation point of view because they do a really great job and have these crazy characters they run into. But at the end of the day, the writing on the show is just so strong and funny. Like, that's what kept me in it every time.
Yeah, it's just really whipped smart. I really liked the episode where they're making fun of Nightmare on Elm Street with a scary Terry character. And I thought that was just great. Like, it made fun of it, but it also showed that they really liked that series and showed, like, a real appreciation for, like, really gritty things with just, like, whether it's, like, certain scenes, like the boiler scene or the fact that the character, like, constantly says, like, "What's up, bitch?" and then it just goes... And then that one, it's all about dreams where you're just going further and further into a dream and it gets crazy. It goes into Scary Terry's dream and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, really no, like the whole series, like I like the episode, it's episode number 8, Rick's D Minutes, where the family is like watching TV and Rick the grandfather is like complaining about everything as he always does. And then he ends up like putting on the TV to like seeing the rest of the universe. And it shows like alternate dimensions. And they find a dimension where the dad of the family is like super famous. And they're trying to like figure out how to do that. Like, it's just
in that moment when they're like flipping through the channels, like they could have done like half the episode almost to devoted that.
Like, I know. There was so,
ridiculous and funny.
Yeah. Yeah, like the whole show has like little moments like that where like it's just like 30 seconds long and there's funny little things in there, but then it goes, and that's just one part of the episode. Like, you're right, like because the show, they have like, you know, satires of like other shows that you're watching, of like The Bachelor and things like that, and then they go down this whole different other storyline. Like, it does that all the time. And I also like the episode where the dad is, I don't think it's the pilot episode, but it's the one where I think it's near the end. It's where he makes Rick gives them the thing that makes the a gun, basically, that it creates these like slaves that do these jobs for you. And the dad says he wants to improve his golf game, and none of the things can help him, and they can't. It's just, there's a whole gimmick to it that I don't want to spoil, but it's so funny. Like
the Meeseeks and Destroy. There you go. So they're constantly playing with. Yeah. It's funny how like they always have like this very simple concept, and then it always spirals out of control. And I like how they have their own like internal logic. Like with the previous, you know, episodes, it's usually like Morty who's like in charge of the adventure. But for that one, Rick's usually in charge of the adventures.
Right.
But then the kid gets in charge, and then he goes into this like Jack and the Beanstalk scenario. He's like, are you doing?
And that episode has such a twisted, like such a wrong twist in it, and it's so well done. And I was just, it was so like
the ending,
almost right. Well, like it's the ending and also the build up to the ending where it was like partially like uncomfortable or scary, but like still funny. And then at the very end, it has such a good payoff for it too. Like, it's just, the show does that constantly, and it's a shame because like it does border on like grotesque and like kind of the Ren and Stimpy way at times, but I don't know. Like, I feel like it does a lot better job of like keeping it within the realms of the story and like
plus it has a good pace. Like, I don't think it's just like staring at their grotesque nature. Like, you know, they'll have like something that's kind of gross, like shoving like some weird seeds up your butt to get through customs, like intergalactic customs.
Right.
But it's just it's just like one little beat along the string of jokes that are coming at you like a mile a minute.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely an adult animated show. Like, it's pretty disgusting and out there at times, but that does not hinder what's like, it's honest. Like you said, those are just like elements of the plot on the way. Like, I think the show has such clever premises to each episode, and like it sets them up so quickly and just rolls out with it.
Other than the Scary Terry episode, I really liked the ninth episode, Something Wicked This Way Comes, where they're making fun of both Twilight Zone, but also Ray Bradbury, which was just great. Like, the devil was played by Alfred Molina, and it just rips up that whole notion of like the devil at a pawn shop, like selling crap.
Yeah.
That always has a twist to it. And fun of M. Night Shyamalan and that and other episodes. And everything under the sun can be just lampooned and really well done.
And what's funny, And what I love about that episode is Rick is such an endearing character. Rick and the title characters, yeah, I mean, they're both voiced by the same guy, by the co-creator of the show, Justin Roiland. And they're such distinct voices. Like, I really love the voice acting he does. Right. Like, it's so
I like that they're distinct, but recognizable. There'll be like little moments where they're like, oh, this makes sense that he's the grandfather, because they'll have like similar little vocal tics or like little ways that they move or...
I think
there was even one where they kind of had the same like little belch or something, and that was really, really cool to notice.
Yeah,
and there's also like a little heart between them. Like they get into arguments a lot, but at the same time, like there's one later episode where there's a touching moment, but it never there's a good balance there. I think most of this is just like a real fun like sci-fi romp adventure.
Yeah. Like they do come up with a story reason why Rick like has Morty around all the time, but there's also an emotional one, and there's also it's very well done. And they have just great rapport with each other. Like they're just too, like Morty is such this insecure teenager who is just trying to like get by being a kid, and Rick is just so abrasive and takes him on these things. But he's kind of a good grandfather in a way too, because he's like, no, you need to really live. Like I'm taking you on things that this is what's gonna matter.
Yeah, so I like the pilot episode where he's talking about like, well, you go to school and they just like they sit through there and it's just like 2 + 2 = 4 and what is this crap? You don't need to go there.
Yeah, exactly. And also, just to go back to the Twilight Zone inspired episode, the Something Ricked, like what I like about it is Rick constantly, like, he's such a smart character in the best way. Like, I love when he gets the best of everything, because he does such a good job, because he's so casual about it.
Yeah, you love it when he succeeds and
I do. Yeah, like you
really, really.
Yeah,
dumb
yeah.
People.
Like
he's very. Very, just has a very scientific mind, or even
he
just
does.
Like a,
yeah,
just not even scientific, just like he's very, very,
he's crafty, like he's just one step ahead, and he's so good. Like in that episode, like I'm gonna spoil part of the story, but it doesn't really matter that much. Is I like how the devil is selling these cursed items to people, and so Rick he's pissed off at the devil for doing that, because he's like, you shouldn't be lying. And so he creates a business where if you bring him things, he will like depossess them basically, and it's just really ingenious. And this show is amazing.
Yeah, you can tell that it's both science fiction nerds, but then also just like science nerds. Like they love both sides of it. Like, oh, we realize this is like really love like these Twilight Zone stories or Ray Bradbury stories, but we also realize how ludicrous it is if it happened in real life.
Yeah, like I feel like and this show also does a good job, because I mean Rick and Morty are the central characters, but the show often separates between them and the rest of the family, or even when it involves the rest of the family. Like one of the things that it does so well is, unlike other animated shows that I still watch, like Simpsons or Family Guy, or like I feel, even maybe it might be just because the show's still fresh, it's only one season in, but I never had a problem with which character I was with in that episode. Like they always bring something different. The writing is so good
because
they don't
necessarily force it they have a lot of episodes where there's like an A and B story where there's something going on at home, like the Meeseeks is a good thing there, where Rick and Morty have their own thing with them and what they're doing, but then the father and the mother have their stories. But then there's some some of these episodes where it's really just a Rick and Morty show, and every once in a while you'll see like what's going on at home, if it's even connected at all. But I like how they don't necessarily just force it, just because, well, we have all these characters, we got to use them.
Yeah, or other times, like, the daughter goes on the adventure with them. Like, they definitely change it up enough that it always felt like they were doing something good with the inclusion of the other characters. And a lot of other shows, animated or not, can struggle with that because, sometimes your central characters are really strong, but nobody else is that good. So, but this show, the whole ensemble is really great. Like, I'm very excited for the next season. I'm sad that it's only 10 episodes. I want so much more of this. Like, I it's such a well-done show, and I hope it gets renewed for more. Like, it seems like it's pretty successful in deep cable standards. So here's hoping for a lot more.
Yeah, it seems like it's got a lot, and it's definitely got a good word of mouth. Like, I keep hearing more about this show. Like, maybe it's just because I've now tuned into it. I see more and more, like, articles, whereas before I was kind of I'll get around to watching that eventually. But this seems
this
like a
was
perfect
one, of,
one where a friend's going to tell you about
it. Yeah, like this was a show that I kept hearing getting referenced. And I remember there was a Simpsons couch gag where they involved them in it. But I didn't get it. Like, I was just like, okay, like, whatever. That's characters from another show. But now that I've seen this show, I really appreciate that more. And any of the hype I've heard is completely warranted. So if you haven't checked out Rick and Morty and you have a means to, it's not streaming anywhere, unfortunately. But
a lot of them are on YouTube.
There's episodes on YouTube?
Yeah, but it's definitely worked out fine because hopefully this stays around for many seasons to come.
I really hope so. Yeah, here's hoping this is more successful than Community and lasts a lot longer. So yeah. I'm very, very happy. So any other final thoughts on Rick and Morty?
Other than just what you said, like seek it out. Like even if you haven't really taken a shine to Adult Swim shows in the past, like this is probably like one of the best animation shows.
Yeah,
really fun.
Yeah, it's up there. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Like China, Illinois, we talked about earlier this year. Like that was one, and is definitely another one that's up there.
Yeah, I ended up finishing that. That was really fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I like all the ones that they're absurd, but all the characters have really good motivations, and then just like they have good interpersonal like connections. I think this is another one.
Yeah, I agree. So that is Rick and Morty on Adult Swim, and the new season, I believe, starts next week, if not sometime soon. So, yeah.
On the 26th, so the beginning of next week.
There we go. Great, yeah. Awesome. So, Lenny, Bethany, thank you so much.
Exactly.
Please tell us more things to listen, watch, whatever. I take your recommendations with a lot of respect.
They watch a lot of TV shows, so they're on the pulse.
Very nice. All right, so that is Rick and Morty. Lastly, we're going to be discussing the surprise release of the 9th studio album from alt country, but don't call them alt country rockers, Wilco, with their latest album, Star Wars. July 16th, Wilco surprised everybody with the free release of their latest album, Star Wars. That's the name of the album, obviously. And just released it for free on their website. You can go there. You can just give them your email address. You download it, and bam, got a new Wilco album. This is the follow-up to their last album, The Whole Love, which came out in 2011. And that album was nominated for a Grammy, as I think pretty much every Wilco album is. I think they just throw it in there every now and then.
Yeah.
And
under the Americana genre.
It was actually for Best Rock Album.
Oh, it was? Okay. I'm thinking of like
in there
one
time.
Of their earlier ones. I think it was like Wilco, the album. That was the
maybe.
One.
Yeah. They thread the needle between that because they've always been pegged as like being like alt country and Americana.
Like
and they kind of walk between the genres. So their new album came out, and they announced that a physical release will be coming out next month, so don't worry, there will be a CD and vinyl version soon enough. But in the meantime, we have this album, out of nowhere, of Wilco, which Wilco's one of the, they broke through earlier, over a decade ago with Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, and there was a whole documentary covering that. I personally should admit right now, I love Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Yeah,
one of my,
a classic, but
if not my top 10, one of my top 20 favorite albums ever. Like I really, really love
really
that
good.
Album. It's amazing. Yeah. So go listen to that. But we're talking about their new album, Star Wars. So Star Wars. This album is, and it's interesting because Jeff Tweedy is the lead singer of Wilco, one of the founding members, obviously, and he's always doing something. Like last year, he did a whole tour with his son called their band Tweedy, and had this whole album they released, and I listened to that. And that album it wasn't bad by any means, but it was really, really long and just kind of got repetitive after a while. And so it's always interesting. And Jeff Tweedy, like, goes off on these, like, solo projects and different things, and then he comes back to Wilco at the end of the day.
Yeah, wasn't Tweedy the album that was kind of, like, just kind of garage rocky, like, really ramshackle kind
of
stuff?
Yeah, it just seemed like lounging and hanging out with your friends.
Like that.
Yeah, this definitely has a little bit of a feel from that because Wilco for the last, I forgot that The Whole Love even came out. Like, I remembered Wilco the album.
Well,
I thought that was the last album.
I listened to that again this week just to make sure. Man, that was not great. It just kind of
rolled
by.
I really
totally forgot what happened.
I barely remember anything from it. Like, I was looking at the track list, and I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember these. But, yeah, I definitely, that album escaped me entirely.
Right.
But this album is a step back in their, like, so Wilco has been going on a weird trajectory ever since Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, where they kind of got a little bit more, I don't want to say, like, experimental, but, like, they started, like, playing with a lot more with production stuff in their albums and would right. do as experimental as you kind of can get with alternative rock. And I feel like with this new album, it's kind of a return to form in a way where they're going back to just a really lo-fi, simple rock and roll sound, kind of garage rocky, because a lot of these songs have a very no-frills attitude to them,
mm-hmm.
but they still sound very Wilco-y. It sounds very cohesive. It definitely sounds like this is an album with a capital A, even if I don't really know what maybe the theme of this album is, if you're going to put one on it. So
yeah, the
I mean,
themes
I've,
are pretty scattershot. I've, like a lot of it's kind of just normal rock kind of stuff. But
yeah, I think at the end of the day, here's where I fall on this: is this album is probably the best Wilco album to come out in some time. But I don't think it's like a really good album either, though. Like, it kind of just washes over you, and
right.
it's not like maybe there's like little things that I've listened to this album like 3 or 4 times at this point, and I've yet to pick up on intricacies with each additional listen. It's more like, okay, yeah, this is okay. Like, I enjoy while I'm
yeah.
listening.
I like like kind of I like certain tracks on it. I really like the overall energy, especially coming from The Whole Love, which I thought was just it was like a wet blanket of an album.
Mm-hmm.
This one, especially like in the middle there with Pickled Ginger, was a really kind of ramshackle, like just a rock track, which exactly what you're saying, like you'd expect from like their early days, even going like mm-hmm. beyond past Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, where they kind of set that template for a while where they're kind of pushing the boundaries of what people expect of alternative rock or indie rock. But I like how this one's just kind of like, I mean, they've been releasing albums for free online for a long time, I think, like,
yeah,
since the Yankee Hotel. But
mm-hmm.
I like how this one's just, like, no frills, kind of getting back to the basics, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's also not, like, a really ambitious record. I think it's just kind of like, you know, there's always a lot of headlines about Wilco being, like, a dad rock kind of band. And for a while, I think they were, especially on that last record. So this one is good to kind of, like, infuse some energy in there, get back to basics, kind of like with mm-hmm. What Spoon did on their last record. Like, that was a little better mm-hmm. and got back to what
yeah.
they're really good at, even if the whole record wasn't like of a piece. Like, there were like really good songs on it, and Wilco mm-hmm. and Jeff Tweedy are still really good about like getting all the pieces together, you know, especially with Nels Klein and his guitar work throughout the years.
Yeah, no, I think this album is, it's really, really catchy in parts. I think it starts off pretty strong, but not, like, Wilco's a weird band because even on my first couple of listens to Yankee Hotel back in the day, I didn't quite get, like, what was so great about it because it seemed pretty, like, all the songs had a very similar sound to them because Wilco doesn't really expand too much on their sound once they're in their album. But on repeat listens, there's a lot to appreciate about Yankee.
Yeah, there's a lot of intricacies with the production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in this album, I don't really know if that's going to be the case or not. Like,
right.
I get the... my first listen to this, like, it really washed over me because it's such a short album and it's so...
Yeah, that's,
like,
that's
a lot
what
of
I
these
liked
songs,
about it, I think, coming from
probably,
the last
yeah.
two.
Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah, they've gotten... They've done
they're,
their,
they're
like,
good with their editing on this one.
And stuff, yeah.
Both on a song-by-song basis,
yeah.
but overall...
Yeah, like, this is an album where, as I'm listening to it, I do enjoy my time with it. Like, I think it starts off pretty strong, especially with those first couple tracks, like, More and Random Name Generator. They're, like, you know, they got some really nice, they sound simple, but there's some really good hooks to those. And, like, I think
yeah.
that Wilco sounds like they're actually, like, kind of having fun for a change, whereas their last couple albums have been real drowsy albums that are just kind of sad, and this
yeah.
one seems like it's
like a good
enjoyable.
Good example there is EKG, which is just really short, kind of like it's instrumental, like freak out of a song. Like, it almost sounds like a Captain Beefheart kind of song.
Yeah.
And really it's a throwaway because it's like 1 minute, but it kind of sets the tone for what's to come. And
right.
you know, songs like More and Random Name Generator also have that kind of quirkiness to them, but you still have like Tweedy's like really relaxed vocals, which makes sense that they're often pegged as Americana and
mm-hmm.
Country rock kind of stuff, even when they've done that, you know, with like his side projects, he's done that even more. But mm-hmm. I've always liked that, like, kind of weird comparison between his vocals that are always really, like, kind of flowy, and that's probably why we're always talking about how, like, this album and some of the most recent ones kind of flow over you and they don't really stick. But yeah, I liked it from, like, just like odd guitar effects on, you know, songs like Taste the Ceiling, and just had like a weird, really weird, like, kick on a lot of these, from just like a bass, like, rock instrumentation.
Wilco's undergone a really, like, if you're a fan of their music, it's a really distinct shift from where they were. Like, back in their, like, Summer Teeth Yankee stages, like, Jeff Tweedy was much more, like, he had more range in his vocals, I feel. Like, he really had a lot of, I don't know, like, there was something very heartbroken about the way he was singing. And he kind of has fallen into this more, like, chugging along. And this album is in the style where he's not overt in his singing. He, like, is pretty restrained. And I feel like when they made that shift, I've never really liked it that much. Like, I preferred them all pre A Ghost Is Born, which was their follow-up to Yankee Hotel. Like, after that, they've kind of gotten a little bit boring to me.
Yeah.
But this is the first album where I feel like with that style, they finally did something that made it a little more memorable. Like, you know, just thinking again, like, I do remember how these songs sounded, and, like, more, even it's got a nice, like, got a nice beat to it, and
all the things I remember from this one are all instrumental wise. Like, a lot of the delivery of the lyrics, I don't remember any of the lyrics. Good melodies from Tweedy, which I think that would push it into, like, another level that albums like Summer Teeth and Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Yeah.
Like, they had some real earworms, kind of mixed in with, like, just straight ahead, like, shaggy rock kind of stuff, and then they're more experimental productions.
Right, because I feel what happens with this album is because each song has that same, like, I mean, there's some slower numbers on here, but they all have that same restrained garage rock, you know, hushed vocals, but, like, not energetic sounding, but still, like, moderately tempoed. Like, there's nothing flashy enough with either the effects or the vocals to get me to pay attention too strongly to the lyrics. Whereas their older stuff, like, there's, like, moments of silence, or there's, like, really, like, letting it out in certain parts. And with this album, like, I don't really know what I'd have to read over the lyrics again to really know what's going on. Because Wilco has some great lyrics in their history, and I'd love to know, like, what he's singing about here.
Same here. But, yeah, a lot of it just didn't connect. But, I was really surprised by it, because, like, one, I wasn't really expecting the Wilco album. Like, I don't even know when the last one dropped. I think it was 2011, right?
It was.
And I think it's fun all the way through. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and I do really like that they kind of flip your expectations. But at this point, like, especially when those last two albums came out, like, you expect a ballad like Where Do I Begin on this album to be, like, straight ahead, like Tweedy and his acoustic guitar, almost like lap steel arrangement style. But I like that it's, you know, that garage sound, electric guitars, and it bursts into, like, the triumphant coda at the end there, with, like, the backwards drums and then the guitars kind of hitting at it.
I got the feeling from this, because I've seen Wilco live, and Wilco's a really good live band, and I got the feeling that this album will sound so much better in the live setting. Like, I could hear some of these songs, and I could just feel already, like, oh, this is gonna, like, really, I think it'll, like, come together a lot better there. I think as it sounds right now, it's just, like, it's not flashy enough to notice, but I can see it coming together, so.
Yeah.
It's certainly exciting and unexpected, because, I mean, bands release albums without any fanfare all the time, but Wilco would be one of the last bands. I mean, like, even though they've released stuff digitally for so long, I just wouldn't, I mean, nobody even knew they were recording, so.
They've come up, like, they're still really popular, and they definitely get a lot of, people are still reviewing them really well, as much as, like, we're not liking the last few. Like, there's still a lot of people that are just like, oh, they love Wilco. It's like, still one of their, like, favorite bands, like, looking overall. And it's good to see them, like, get back to what they do best, and even if it's in, like, a smaller, you know, percentage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm happy. I mean, I want Will. I like Wilgo a lot. I really want them to succeed. And I haven't been too big on their last few albums, but they have plenty of fans out there. Like, they, you know, headline sure. music festivals. They're a big, big upper card band. So, you know, people know them, obviously.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Any other final thoughts on Star Wars, Kyle?
I'd say recommend it. Yeah, a little thumbs up with maybe a little wavering every once in a while,
yeah.
but not too shabby, especially after those last two, like we were saying.
Yeah, and a little bit of a sneak peek to the final episode. I would not say this is Wilco's worst album by any means. That's definitely not the case.
No.
But
what do you think is their worst overall?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me pull up their discography while I'm talking. But I will say that I think this is the best album that Wilco's done, like, post A Ghost Is Born. Like, I think it's, right. you know, in the last 10 years, this is a really, really good album.
I remember Sky Blue Sky having a few really cool Nels Klein tracks on it, but then overall, it had a lot of duds. Like,
I
Whole
do
Love
not
was, like, really
that album.
Flatline,
yeah.
but Sky Blue Sky was coming. It was in that era where it was, like, really over the top, and then just everything, like, fell with a thud for me.
For me, it's probably, I mean, I haven't literally listened to their first album, AM. I think I listened to it once back in the day. But for me, it would be a tie between Sky Blue Sky and The Whole Love. I'd have to go back and listen and see which one is my least favorite. But probably one of those two.
Yeah. When I always look at that, like, it's like Whole Love is a very boring album. But Sky Blue Sky, like, you can see that they had a lot of lofty things that they're going for. But then it falls flat, like, even harder, and I think
there are a couple of, like, pretty good songs on Sky Blue Sky. Like, I like hold on, pull up the checklist here. Like, I remember I liked I hated Impossible Germany. Oh god, that song's really just by the title I already remember that one. I don't know, actually, maybe that's that one. I don't know, I forget what I liked on this album, but
it's
one of those two for sure.
There's been a lot of them where, like, I remember I was really getting into Loco, like Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. I listened to that a lot, Summer Teeth. For some reason, I guess it makes sense because I like Americana stuff. But Being There, I really, really like. But I went back and listened to it, and I was like, this kind of reminds me of their latter day stuff, but just Americana, like hardcore Americana version of it. And I don't know, it just floated by like a dandelion in the wind.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and listen to Being There again as well. Again, like, it's been a long time, but no, Summer Teeth and Yankee Hotel are like my two favorites, absolutely. I'm glad that Jeff Tweedy cleaned up. He's not on drugs anymore, and he's reckon, like, you know, he's clean now. But he, I think from those dark places, he made some like really outstanding music. And they also had Jay Farrar in the band, who was like they had a very tumultuous relationship with him, but he certainly like brought them to the peak of their, like, he brought out oddly enough, he brought out like a lot of their best ideas as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, the sadly recently passed Jay Farrar. Okay. Anyway, Kyle, anything? So, that's all. That's Wilco. That's Star Wars. The album. You should listen to it. It's recommended. You should listen to it. And that is all for episode number 161 of Test Patterns, the penultimate episode. Thank you for listening. As always, one thing you can do, penultimate or not, we will always have a place in your heart, in the form of Amazon, if you'd like to support the show. And all you have to do to keep this show afloat, even after it is over and done with, we would still like it if you clicked on our Amazon link to help send us. Amazon sends us money, you don't do anything, and it keeps things, it pays us a little bit for all the work that we did do over the years. So what do you do?
Exactly.
Why? You go to the link that we provide before you're going to buy something on Amazon. You could find that link in the show description, or go to our forever home on the web, even after we're done, testpatterns.libsyn.com. Click those links anywhere, the banner, click it, and then bookmark that. Use that forever whenever you're buying something from Amazon. It helps us stay afloat, costs you no extra money. We love you. That's how it goes, people. Thank you for listening, as always, people. We got a final episode coming up, and then we say au revoir for now for Test Patterns. But thank you, as always, for listening. Thank you, Kyle, for your hard work, hard-hitting reporting.
Thank you for editing, and yes, I have my hard-hitting comments on Wilco albums.
You're definitely getting to the bottom of these deep-seated cases going on in the world.
Yeah.
So, exactly. All right. Well, thank you, Kyle. Thank you for listening. Thank you, me. And we'll see you again. We will see you next week again. Same time, same place, same internet.
Will.
Yes, we will. Kyle.
It's Scary Terry time.
Welcome to Nightmare, bitch.
Oh, here we go.
Holy crap!
Looks like some sort of legally safe knockoff of an 80s horror character with miniature swords for fingers instead of knives.
I'm Scary Terry. You can run, but you can't hide, bitch.
We have to escape into someone else's dreams, Morty. This again? Oh man, it looks like we've hit dream bedrock here, Morty.
Oh jeez, Rick. Oh, this isn't good.
Fear from here on out, bitch.
Holy crap, Morty. He can travel through dreams. We're so screwed!